love, everybody. Ringo here. Beautiful day in LA. Talk. So, it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Welcome to Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast where we talk about all things solo, and yes, some Beatles come up occasionally as well. I am your host, one of the hosts actually, Dr. Kit O'Toole, and you probably know me from my book, Songs We Were Singing, Guided Tours to the Beatles' Lesser Known Tracks, as well as Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. And we're so happy to be back with you all, and we have a big show planned for tonight, and so we are, without further delay, going to start it off here. So let me introduce my co-hosts. So let me bring them on here. Okay. And one more. Okay. So let me introduce, I know you all know these great people here. First off, we'll start with Ken Michaels. He is the host of the long-running syndicated show, Every Little Thing. He is also the co-host of the very popular podcast, Things We Said Today. And I am also extremely jealous because he got to see Gladys Knight over the weekend. Ooh, yes. One of my all-time favorite soul singers, so I'm insanely jealous of you, Ken, but I'm going to welcome you anyway.
Okay, thank you, Kit. It was a tremendous show.
I bet.
You know, one of my favorite singers.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely. And next we have someone you know very well. He is the co-host of the popular Paul McCartney-centric podcast, Two Legs. And I'm insanely jealous of him because he got to meet Bob Seger and also, was it Elton Dean and Alice Cooper? Like a
yes.
Trifecta.
It was a trifecta. It was really cool.
So,
Alice Cooper started telling the story about Paul McCartney coming in and playing the piano, playing Come and Get It for them to use the Hollywood Vampire album. So that was a fun story.
That is amazing. Well, Tom Hunyadi, of course, welcome to the show.
Hello, everybody, and hello, Kit and Ken.
All right. Well, and Ken Womack, unfortunately, could not be with us tonight. He had an engagement at Monmouth University when you're the dean. When the dean's there, you are a very, very busy man, but he will be back on the next episode. But we've got a big show planned. We've got news. We are going to, by popular demand, talk about the lithographs that Klaus Voormann did for the Ringo album. We talked about Ringo last week, that the album, and ran out of time. So we're going to just spend a little time on that, and then we are going to dive into Milk and Honey and Menlove Avenue. It's going to be just a great show. But let's start off with our main news guy, Ken. So Ken, you're representing two Kens tonight.
That's right. So, I'm doing double duty tonight.
That's right. So fill us in. What's the latest?
Well, it would help if I had Ken Womack's glasses right now, but
or cats.
We'll start by saying, I have to make sure the first two things I bring up here, I don't forget. We have a tendency sometimes to forget bringing up certain things. But happy birthday today going out to Yoko Ono.
Yes.
Who turns 86 years old. God bless her. I have nothing but just tremendous admiration for the woman and what she's done to keep John's legacy alive, as well as her own art. So she's a pretty amazing person. Happy birthday to her. And also, for those of you that don't know, Sean Lennon will be on Stephen Colbert's show tonight as part of a band that he's been with for a few years, the Claypool Lennon Delirium. It's with Les Claypool from the band Primus. And they have a brand new album coming out this Friday called South of Reality. So Sean will be on Stephen Colbert on tonight's show. Usually they always have the musical guests on the last 5 minutes, but I can't swear to that, but that's usually how it's done. So we have to bring up the brand new limited edition. It's the traveling edition of Egypt Station, which is coming out on May the 10th. Everybody's been talking about it since the news broke. Do you want me to list all of the contents of it, or just the general?
Yeah, just the main one.
Okay, because you can get the music from Egypt Station on vinyl. There's a limited edition black double vinyl. And every time you say vinyl, it means 180 gram. Yeah. There's an exclusive limited edition night blue vinyl. It's being called Egypt Station 2, which has unreleased songs, including Frank Sinatra's Party. I wonder what that's about.
I can't wait to hear that. And
62nd Street. There's also an extended version of the song Who Cares, and four live performances from Paul at Abbey Road. There's one song from each venue: Abbey Road, the Cavern Club, at Lippa, and also at Grand Central Station. There's a limited edition CD for Egypt Station. They call it the concertina because you can, you know, spread it out and it looks like a concertina, I guess. Also a blue cassette version of Egypt Station, HD audio of all the tracks, they say upon shipment, and additional rare performance footage inside. Now that's the musical part of it. Although they also say additional hidden surprises and rarities. Yes. Yep. But they also have Paul's handwritten lyrics, a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle. What else? Playing cards, luggage stickers. You get the idea. It's all in a suitcase. There's a handwritten note from Paul, postcards, a travel itinerary, and they're making 3,000 of these. Mm-hmm. And the list price, from what I've been told, is $360. Plus their shipping charges, too.
Yep.
So what do you guys think about this new release? And I know you're buying it, right, Tom?
Yeah, yeah. I went forward to get it. And that's only because they offered the a monthly plan. If they didn't offer that, I probably wouldn't have got this. So, but yeah, I was very excited when I saw this set. I thought it was really cool. I mean, yeah, I already have the cassette. Yeah, I already have the CD. Yeah, I already have the vinyl. And that's fine. I think this is a really cool set. It looks a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to showing it when it comes in. So looking forward to it.
How do you respond to all the people who are saying, with all these box sets that have come out and the remastered albums and everything, this is $360 here that you're shelling out? Yeah. You know, is Paul taking advantage of the fans in your eyes?
No, no. I mean, what is he in business for? To make money. You know, I mean, we're talking about, what are we doing? We're talking about Paul, where he's keeping his name, you know, alive. We're keeping it going. I'm a physical media fan. I want to, you know, continue to help, you know, continue buying physical media. I mean, when that day comes when there's no longer physical media, which eventually it may come, it'll be a sad day for me, but I support physical media, and I think it's very important that you support the musicians or the acts or the actors or whatever that you love. I think it's important for you to get out there to support them, because that's the only way that this medium is going to continue, is by supporting it.
Okay. Well, you keep hearing that vinyl has been making a comeback, and every single year there's more sales in vinyl.
Exactly.
Cassettes are picking up in sales. Yep. So you never know. I don't know if the physical format's going to die. Kate, how about you?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Tom. You wanted to say something?
No, I would say no. I agree with you. I don't necessarily think it's going to die either. But, you know, there are talks about now certain companies like Samsung and others are going to stop playing. They're going to stop making Blu-ray players. So, I mean, there's information out there that that they think that this medium is dying. However, yeah, it's still going strong. And, you know, and I think we all should support that.
Okay. Kit, your turn.
I'm going to be the party pooper here. you know, and in fact, I'm just showing a viewer comment on here. Hello, Andy. Said he will also not be buying it. He said three vinyl editions of Egypt Station, the Target CD and the cassette. I'm good on this. Yeah, I mean, I completely understand. I'm not as much of sort of a memorabilia collector. I mean, I, I like some of it, but I care more about the music. That's like my number one thing. And I mean, I was just stunned when the news came out and there are like, what, three bonus tracks, and you know, one of them is the extended version of Who Cares. I was expecting a lot more. I was really surprised. And then, of course, there's some live stuff as well, some recordings, you know, from the Grand Central Terminal concert, and I forget where, Lipa, and maybe
more, I Cavern forget. Club. Right. Cavern Club, Abbey Road.
That's right. Yep. So there's that. That's great. If they just had a music edition of this, which there is a rumor that that could be coming, I hope it's true, because that I will buy. You know, that I will buy. But I just think it's just too expensive. I'm just showing another Hello Tom. Yeah. Another thing. Yep. Same thing. Too much. Too expensive. Not much bonus music and too much art artwork. So yeah, that's kind of. And they said like what they did with New. That's what they should be doing. That New special edition where they had all the bonus. Yeah. There you go. Yep. Like Tom is showing right here. Yeah. So that I would buy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, but the reaction from this has been so interesting. I mean,
it's the same reaction. It's the same reaction that the big Wings box set got too. I mean, people were outraged by the $400 price tag for that as well, but guess what? It's sold out in weeks. You know, I looked at the website today, it's still available, but I predict that this thing will sell out soon as well.
Probably.
Yeah, actually, and one last thing, I did, you know, David sent me a text with somebody had it on eBay already for $999.
Oh, God. It doesn't surprise me.
Right.
But I'm with you, Kit. I mean, I'm a completist, but I'm a completist when it comes to the music.
Right.
Yep. The music is really what matters to me the most. And anytime there's ever been a non-LP B-side to a single, I had to have it. If there were bonus songs on CD singles, I had to have it. Anytime there was something that was released audio-wise or video-wise, I had to have it. But I don't care about all this other stuff. I mean, it's nice, and I'm sure it's a great package. But really and truly, I'm not angry at Paul for doing this. I think that he's just catering to the collector. And there are collectors that are out there who will have no problem spending $360 for this. They might be looking at it as an investment that'll be worth a lot more later on to sell. Or they just want to have everything that's ever been released before. But with me, it's always been about the art. It's always been about the music.
Yeah.
And I just hope that these extra songs, Frank Sinatra's Party and 62nd Street, aren't going to be only available on this. We haven't heard whether or not there's going to be a real deluxe version. We did hear that when Egypt Station first came out, that Paul recorded something like 27 songs. So if there was a double CD that came out with all those songs, I'd eat it up in one day. The day it comes out, I'd have no problem with that. That's what I'm looking forward to more than anything else.
Yeah.
But this is not for me, but it's for the people who are the collectors, and there'll always be those people out there. If this sold for $1,000, it would sell out.
Yep. Yeah, I believe
so. It doesn't matter. You know, there are people who are into this who have to have everything that's ever come out, every version, you know. And with me, I can go crazy, but not that crazy. There's a moment here and there in my life when I might be just a tad bit sensible, and this could be one of them.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
so those are our views on that. And some other news to get to: John and Yoko's wedding album is being reissued on March the 22nd, almost to the day of the couple's 50th anniversary, what would be 50th anniversary. It's the third of their experimental albums, coming out on CD, also on white vinyl, on the Secretly Canadian label. And also Sean's label as well. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name. It'll come to me. But the white vinyl one, which will come out as a box set like the original one, has all the handwritten stuff that was in there, the certificate. There's supposed to be a photo of the wedding cake from the ceremony, stuff like that. It's going to be included in the box set on vinyl. I think it's only the white vinyl one.
Right.
I doubt they would fit that with the CD unless they put that in a box. Okay. Yeah. Also, on February 9th, on the 55th anniversary of when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan, Paul was in New York City. And as we remember that day so well, 73 million people watching, Paul was in his car and he took a photo of the marquee of the Ed Sullivan Show. So he was there on that same, right in that same area, 55 years later in New York City. Pretty cool that he shared it with us. He put it on Instagram. So just knowing that he was there at that time on that important anniversary is kind of special. Mm-hmm. Also, something else I just want to share with everybody in case they don't know about this. It's kind of sad news. But Zach Nilsson, who is the first child of Harry Nilsson, it's actually through Harry's second marriage. He's battling cancer and he has stage 4 colon cancer. And he's about to receive chemo treatment this week. But I learned a couple days ago that Paul McCartney actually wrote a letter to him as a letter of encouragement to help fight through this. And he also said in the letter what a privilege it was for him to know his father and what a great talent he was. And also mentioning the fact that his current wife, Nancy, had also battled cancer and she got through it. But it was just so sweet that Paul McCartney sent this to Zach Nilsson, who is, as far as I know, he never met him. And Zach's a really young guy, too. He's, I know he's born in the early 70s. Yeah. So send out some prayers, folks, to Zach Nilsson. He's a really nice guy. I had the chance to interview him last year, and actually the interview is on my website if you want to listen to it. Very down-to-earth guy. Whatever memories he had to share about Harry, he told me about that in the interview. Also, as I'm sure you know, there's a new movie coming out called Yesterday. And this movie tells the story of a musician named Jack who survives a bus accident during a freak global blackout. And he wakes up in a world where no one's ever heard of the Beatles before. But the cool thing about this is that Jack remembers all the songs. He knows all the Beatles songs. He's the only person on the planet that knows the Beatles songs. So this movie is coming out on June the 28th, and it's being directed by Danny Boyle, who won an Academy Award for Slumdog Millionaire. He was also the writer of Love Actually. It also includes appearances from James Corden and Kate McKinnon, who I love from Saturday Night Live. She actually plays Jack's ruthless agent. So this movie is coming out, as I said, June the 28th. You can see trailers all over the internet. I know lots of Beatle fans have been sharing it. So it's a pretty cool idea.
Yep.
Waking up in a world where the Beatles didn't exist before.
Yep.
It's almost kind of like It's a Wonderful Life in a way. Maybe. I don't know. That's what I was thinking. Some other news, singer, songwriter, and actress Jenny Lewis has a new album due out March the 22nd called On the Line, and she has Ringo playing drums on the first single, which is called Head's Gonna Roll, which is now available to buy. And the album was recorded at Capitol Records Studio B, and the song also has Don Was on bass, Ben Montench on Hammond B3 organ, and Jim Keltner and Beck will also be on the album.
Nice lineup. Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot of the people that Ringo normally works with. Also, lots of magazine news here, folks. There is an issue devoted to George Harrison, which can be found in the Ultimate Music Guide. It includes all of his albums reviewed, archival interviews, plus looks at his collaborations, India, George's relationship with Eric Clapton, and Mighty Python. Again, that's the Ultimate Music Guide. John Lennon is on the front cover of Uncut Magazine. There's an article on him that revolves around his, what they call his rock and roll revolution. And then there's Sean Lennon and Les Claypool. They're on the front cover of Guitar Player Magazine. And as I said, they have a new album coming out this Friday called South of Reality. And the magazine refers to this new album as the prog rock masterpiece of 2019.
Wow.
All right.
Right.
So I'm sure I'm going to be listening to that pretty soon, as soon as it comes out. And as I said, don't forget, Sean will be on Stephen Colbert tonight.
Yep.
So that's the news.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, this is, I told you all this jam-packed show, and then there are never things to run out of to talk. Right.
If I could just add, you know, going back to the Wedding album, you know, whether you like it or hate it, I think it's very important that all the music of these four individuals is out there for you guys to buy in this format. So, mm-hmm. if you're just a casual fan or obsessed Lennon fan, I mean, just go out and support it.
Yep. It's all a part of history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, that's so anything that the Beatles have ever done, group or solo, should always stay in print.
Yeah.
That's true.
And reissue periodically.
Yep.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of past albums and we have one more thing to talk about that was left over from our last show, which we thank you all for tuning into where we talked about the Ringo album. After we ended the show, we ran out of time and realized we hadn't talked at all about Klaus Voormann's lithographs that he created for the album. So we're just going to take a couple of minutes before we get to our main topic to cover those. And I mean, I mean, Klaus Voormann is such a talented artist, and the drawings are, they're whimsical, they're beautiful. I mean, they're just classic Klaus Voormann. And let me just kind of throw out this question: what do you think, if anything, that the drawings contribute to the album, to the songs? You know, why did these drawings exist? You know, so Tom, let's start with you. What do you think
I think they just add to the mystique of Ringo. I mean, I just like all of these drawings are related to the songs on the album. So I mean, the very first one, I mean, the Ringo one, I mean, I'm the greatest, where it says a statue of Ringo. I mean, how cool is that? You know, I think it really just maybe enhance the songs. I mean, you're something to look at while it's almost kind of like Sgt. Pepper when you open the sleeve and then there's all the lyrics. You know, it's just something else to enjoy while you're listening to the Ringo album.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Ken, what do you think?
Well, for one thing, I think it's really special for one that this is Klaus Voormann doing it because of his whole mm-hmm. history sure. with the Beatles. And the front cover, by the way, of the album was tremendous, very Sgt. Pepper-ish, yeah, right. You admit. And I do love all these lithographs because not only is he a great artist, but you know, they do kind of tell part of the story of the songs. And I love the fact that, you know, his artwork is not only great, I love the fact that all the drawings of Ringo have him with the hair that he had at the time with that perm, which was only a temporary thing, but it was really cool. It's, you know, it's kind of like an artifact of the time, you know, thinking of 1973. And I love in particular the drawing for Oh My My, where he's like leaping out of bed, like and with an apron on. Yep. You know, do you have that? That's just so good. you know, like he's in a hospital and he's got nurses around him and stuff like that.
Right.
I love the "Have You Seen My Baby" drawing, oh, yeah. where he's looking out a window, and like the song says, there's a woman out there, you know, his girlfriend, right. who's looking into a milk car. And, you know, you can see her butt going in. She's going into the window and everything. So she's cheating on him with the milkman. Yeah. I mean, there's so many great drawings. And he's just so skillful at doing that. And just the mm-hmm. fact that certainly, I mean, I know that we're living at a time where vinyl is making a comeback. The fact that you have a package like that, it's not just the music. You've got something where you get so much more for the money when you get right. all these drawings. And like I said, someone who has that much history with the Beatles, not just the Revolver album cover, going back to the days in Hamburg. playing on the solo Beatle albums.
Right, right.
Like the Ringo album. Here's a guy who played on the album and he's doing all the artwork. I think that made it even more special.
I agree. And, you know, and again, I just think that Klaus nailed the sort of the themes of the album, the you know, whimsy, as you were mentioning, Tom, like the I'm the greatest. I mean, that's wonderful. I mean, how making him standing on a pedestal. I mean, right. fantastic. I love Step, you know, the Step Lightly drawing, because it's almost a caricature, but not quite. You know, it's just skating, you know, straddling that line, but it's never. I mean, it's affectionate. You know, I mean, it's an affectionate portrayal. I also love You and Me, Babe. I love it. It's very simple in a way. I love how you just see the back of Ringo, you know, bowing to the crowd. You're not from the perspective of the audience. You know, you're on stage with them. Yeah, there we go. And and I just thought that's such an interesting way. I mean, you would think that he would draw just a picture of Ringo, you know, his face like he did with the others, but just that slight change in perspective makes it interesting. And again, it just shows how, you know, this whole album was sort of a performance. I mean, you know, it was was like he was putting on kind of a show for you, and Klaus, you know, really enhanced that, I think, with those drawings and just nailed the tone. Tom, were there any in particular that you liked?
I mean, all of them. I think they're all great. I mean, what I was going to mention is that the fact that it's Klaus Voormann and he knows Ringo so well. I mean, you might not have got all these personal touches if it was a different artist, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the great things about Klaus, you know, doing, you know, all this art. So yeah, all of them. I'm the greatest, I think, right off the bat is great. And then, you know, like you said, Ken, does the you know, have you seen my baby, you know, and, you know, seeing the butt, you know, kind of like that line a little bit, you know. So, you know, it's all playful, it's all fun, but what magical artwork.
Absolutely.
Very, very multi-talented gentleman, that's for sure.
I wish he'd continue to do more.
Yeah,
you know, for any solo release or future Beatle release. Yeah. You know?
Yep. That's true. That's true. Mm. All right. So we've covered that. I'm glad a few viewers after the last show, you know, mentioned it. So I'm glad they did, because it is an important part of that album. So I'm glad we got to discuss it. So now let's move on to our main topic. And I'll tell you this, I'm really glad, Ken, I think you suggested this topic, and I'm glad you did, because it was truly a joy to revisit these albums. You know, I hadn't, you know, heard them in a while, and what a wonderful experience. So we are going to talk about two posthumous albums that came out, Men Love Avenue and Milk and Honey. And we're going to talk about where do these fit in the John Lennon catalog, and what do they tell us about, you know, where he was going artistically. But before we get to that, I want to throw this out to you guys. And by the way, all of you who are watching, please feel free to join in the conversation. We want to hear from you. You know, posthumous albums in themselves, it's a very tricky kind of thing, because, you know, a lot of people don't like them because they think it's exploiting the artists. They're not here to, you know, I don't know if defend themselves is the right word, but, you know, there may be a reason why they didn't want certain material released, you know, in their lifetime. And so the estate or whatever are making the decisions for them. Or is it a way to pay tribute to the artist? And, you know, so I just wanted to know, like, what do you think about, you know, posthumous releases? Ken, let's start with you.
Well, I think they're important to put out because they keep the legacy alive. You always have to keep putting out product, whether it's once a year or a couple of years. But I also would like to say that when it comes to Yoko or Olivia, I don't envy their positions at all, because you have to put yourself in the mindset of their deceased husbands and try to figure out whether or not they would have approved these releases. This even applies to the Beatle product too. You know, I sometimes wonder, would John and George have approved of the Sgt. Pepper and the White Album box sets as well? So, but you have to figure that when it comes to Yoko and Olivia, who would know better than those two? And, you know, you still need an occasional release of unreleased material, you know, for the fans who want everything and don't want to feel like it's all final. And sometimes if you run out of unreleased songs, then you've got alternate takes or alternate mixes and stuff like that. And again, if I was Yoko, I would feel like, I know that John was extremely sensitive about his voice. You know, he liked to have reverb on it. He didn't like his voice just raw. And yet Yoko, and most of us, love it raw. However, whatever you do with John's voice, he had one of the greatest voices ever. And yet when you put out something like Stripped Down, which is taking away any of the polish of the studio, and it's just raw vocals and, you know, less production, more, you know, getting back to a Plastic Ono Band feel, you know, when you do that, that's more, I don't know. It's just so difficult to think, how would they approve this? But at the same time, you're in a position where it's always important to put out product. And, you know, I just don't know. It would be a really difficult decision if I was in their shoes to know how those two would feel, because, you know, they were sensitive to their own art. So, but I, like I said, it's now been almost 40 years, believe it or not, since we lost John. You got to keep putting out some things, like the Imagine box set was so wonderful. You know, I don't think anybody would argue with that. But yet, it's also, I have a difficult time wrestling with whether or not John or George would approve of posthumous releases that have come out. But like I said, I got to trust Yoko and Olivia.
And you make a good point, Ken, about the, you know, keeping them alive, and I mean their memory alive, and, you know, putting out this new product to, you know, we find it hard to believe, of course, that people have to be reminded, but you know, but yeah, I mean, there are, and of course, you know, younger generations and so forth. So it keeps them visible, you know, keeps the interest going. I think that's a really good point. And Tom, what about you? What are your feelings on posthumous?
Yeah. You know, I think it's necessary as well. You know, especially with the Milk and Honey. I mean, if you listen to if you have the 2001 CD, you have the interview at the end as a bonus feature, and, you know, there he talks about, you know, we have another album ready to go. I think there was something like 22 songs that were recorded for Double Fantasy Milk and Honey sessions. So that material was there. It was in the pipeline to come out. And I think, you know, Ken, with your interview with Jack Douglas, if fans out there don't know, I think last year you interviewed Jack Douglas. Was that last year? At Strawberry Fields. So, I mean, the music was there and ready to go. Now, whether or not, you know, people would have accused her of, you know, of cashing in, you know, on Lennon's memory, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can consider Men Love Avenue that, but for the case of Milk and Honey, I mean, this was in the pipeline and was going to come out, and I think this was a nice tribute. I think it's good that she waited a little bit, you know, what was it, 3 or 4 years, and then, you know, she had her very successful Seasons of Glass album that came out, where she, you know dealt with, you know, Lennon's loss with on that album, and, you know, a little bit more with Milk and Honey as well. But I think you know, for Milk and Honey was necessary. Now, on Men Love Avenue, maybe not so much. You know, I'm also believe that maybe these two albums could have been combined and just have John stuff on it and not, you know, Yoko stuff. But either way, I love the Milk and Honey the way it is. I like it that it's a continuation of Double Fantasy. So I'm quite happy with the results of Milk and Honey.
And we have a question from one of our viewers who I know personally, Tom. Hello, Tom. Which is, do you think Sean and Donnie have some input too? I think Donnie does.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, well,
When you saw how involved Danny was with Brainwashed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He went out. He was on Conan to support the Apple Years box set. I remember he was on that show, and then he performed, Let It Roll, or no, Ballad Sir Frankie Crisp. I think he performed that song to help support that ballad, or the Apple Years box set. So yeah, I think, you know, and he's right there, you know, helping with the mixes and whatnot.
Let It Down. I think it was Let It Down.
Yeah, Let It Down. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Plus the George Fest.
Yeah.
Right. He was behind as well.
True. So, and I
think Sean might be involved too. I think Yoko probably needs him for input.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I agree.
And Yep, and we have another Alan. Hello, Alan. Saying the Imagine box set is a shining example of how to both salute a particular release and get under its hood to make listening a richer experience. I agree 100%. They did that right. I mean, I really, you know, I couldn't say enough about it. And we have Mr. Mayo. Hello.
Joe.
Yep, that's a great YouTube channel, by the way. Do check that out. And it said, that Yoko's done a terrific job preserving his legacy. Yeah, I mean, certainly with that Imagine project, the book and everything, absolutely. I mean, it was first class. Mm-hmm. You know, it was absolutely first class. So let's dive into these albums, shall we? Mm-hmm. Let's first talk about Milk and Honey. Now, I have to admit, this is a bit of a personal favorite with me, too, because I remember when this album came out. As I was 8 years old when John passed, and I was not, you know, really into the Beatles and all at that point. So, but I absolutely remember the video for Nobody Told Me being played over and over. You know, that was, you know, so that was a very well promoted kind of album. And so, just in general, before we get into some of the specific songs, what do you think Milk and Honey tells us about where John was artistically, where you think he might have been going? You know, where do you think it sounds different than Double Fantasy? I mean, it's just a, this has so many questions that I'd love to, So let's start out with just where you think it he was going artistically. So Tom, what do you, let's start with you.
I think maybe he was headed in a different direction. The fact that, you know, he had cassettes and you got all this inspiration during that boat cruise, from Connecticut down to Bermuda or something like that. You know, everybody else getting sick and you know, he was the only one that wasn't. He gets all this inspiration, records all this music. And on fact of it, he has all these, you know, studio musicians rehearse it before they even know who this project's for, which is, I found, you know, kind of odd. But I think it was because they didn't have a record deal at the time. But, you know, artistically, I think it's, you know, kind of different than what we've heard from in the past. I mean, I think that he was finding inspiration from kind of the new wave scene. I know, especially, you know, bands like, the Rock Lobster Band, the B-52s, found inspiration from Yoko. And I think he really appreciated that. And then, you know, so I think he was, you know, going in a new direction, and also bringing in Jack Douglas, who was producing, you know, bands like Cheap Trick and Patti Smith, you know, and, you know, maybe had a little experience in that direction. So, you know, it's a little different than what I was used to. I know that, you know, it took me a little while to get to like these songs. I don't think I liked them as much as, you know, the more heavier rock and roll, you know, stuff that are not really necessarily rock and roll, but, you know, just the stuff from the early to mid 70s, where it's more personal. He's always been personal, and I think that's one thing that I've always liked him. But I think it's more like the production of the music that really changed for me with Double Fantasy and Milk and Honey. Interesting. So I look at it as more as the production in music than it is lyrically, because lyrically I think he's always been a very personal songwriter anyways.
Hmm.
True. Interesting. Yeah. I never really thought of it, but I mean, thought of it that way in the production. Wow. So what, Kim, what do you think?
That's really interesting what you said there, Tom. I mean, I would agree partly with that, more in terms of the production. I have to admit that when Milk and Honey first came out, I was a little bit disappointed because there was this long wait. I mean, it came out in January of 84, so we're talking about, you had to wait 3 years to hear it. You knew the songs existed. You didn't know what they were going to sound like. And they came across as more rehearsals than they did very polished recordings. The songs on Double Fantasy are so much more polished. And maybe Milk and Honey would have been closer to that in terms of the production. But in terms of genres of music, I mean, the fact that he did Borrowed Time, which is kind of reggae-ish. I don't know what kind of style you call Forgive Me, My Little Flower Princess, which is it's an interesting song. It's the only really disappointing John Lennon song on that album, only because I really felt it wasn't finished. But it had a very unique sound to it. And I think another verse, a little bit more development, that it could have been a really great song. But the songs on Milk and Honey are very strong from John, most of them, as I said, except maybe Forgive Me. And obviously the fact that there's six Lennon songs as opposed to seven on Double Fantasy, you could feel there was less, there was more Yoko than there was John. I don't know if I necessarily would think that it was a more contemporary sound for John. I think there was a lot of criticism at the time that Yoko's music was much more modern sounding than John's was. John's was more of a throwback. If you listen to something like Watching the Wheels and you have the start of the piano there, which reminds you sort of Imagine, it's more like the old John revisiting you. But it's very polished, very well done, great performances. The songs, the quality of the songs were great on Double Fantasy. And I think the quality of the songs for the most part on Milk and Honey were the same, but they didn't have a chance to polish it up more.
Right.
And yet at the same time, I love the looser feel now of Milk and Honey, whereas I didn't when it first came out. And a song like I Don't Want to Face It, man, that's one of the greatest rockers of Dunn's solo career, period.
Right.
I love everything about the song. The lyrics are amazing. You want to save humanity, but it's people that you just can't stand. What kind of a line is that? That's such a great line. You know? And the bass line in there from Tony Levin really makes the song. I mean, that song really cooks. And I love I'm Step It Out. Nobody Told Me is great.
Oh, Nobody Told Me is wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Like you. Yeah. Like you, Kit, that was my first introduction to really John's solo career. I think I'm a year younger than you, and you know I was seven when he died, so it really didn't register. So then we waited. You know, I really wasn't listening much in the radio. I was a big Star Wars freak at the time. You know, so that was really what my world was, you know, revolving around. You know, but you know, really growing up and listening to Nobody Told Me and these silly lyrics. You know, like everybody's smoking and no one's getting high, and you know, there's Nazis in the bathroom just below the stairs. I mean, you know, it kind of, you know, reminds me of his, you know, his weird lyrics and like, you know, I Dig a Pony or something like that, you know. So, you know, and then, you know, reading that the song wasn't, you know, attention or was originally for Ringo, but him refusing to do it after he passed. So yeah, Nobody Told Me, like you said, Ken, just, you know, and Kit, you know, fun song.
It is. And you just answered a question that Mr. Mayo had, which is, was Nobody considered possible song for Ringo? Yes, it was.
So my question to you guys is, can you hear Ringo do that song?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you hear it in your head?
You know,
I mean,
go ahead, Kit. No, just some of it. I mean, boy, that's a hard question, because some of it, I mean, the humor, there's definitely humor in there.
Yeah.
Nobody told him. And I could absolutely picture him delivering Nobody Said There'd Be Days Like These Strange Days Indeed. I mean, I can hear that. But some of the wordplay in there, I don't know. I'm having a harder time hearing that in my head. I mean, because some of that is just pure John to me, you know. I don't know if I could picture Ringo doing some of that. But I, you know, it's intriguing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I could see if if he was still with us, you know, and him being at those sessions for Stop and Smell the Roses, that maybe that song would have been, you know, reworked a little bit more for, you know, for Ringo. I mean, some of the verses may, you know, could have been, you know, made more sense for Ringo to sing. Absolutely. You know, so I do think that Tom, you know, that song would have been given a little bit more of a, you know, a Ringo flair, you know, had he stayed with us.
Yeah, I could hear Ringo singing the chorus.
Yes.
But the verses, it does have a sort of a limited vocal range, so it could have suited Ringo very well.
Right.
Didn't have a wide range vocally for him to tackle. So, you know, I could hear Ringo working on that, but like you said, Kit, maybe different lyrics.
Yeah. That's definitely. And we're getting a number of comments here talking about and sort of mixed opinions of Milk and Honey. That some say that Tom here says that Nobody Told Me and I Don't Want to Face It are the best tracks, and didn't enjoy the Yoko tracks as much, and thought that a lot of the stuff on Milk and Honey was more like it would have been outtakes if John had lived. And I have to disagree. I really, as I said, I hadn't listened to this album in a while. And I found it absolutely fascinating, and I loved many of the songs on here. In fact, some of them, I hate to say it, a few of them even better than Double Fantasy.
I agree. Yeah.
I don't want to face it, definitely. And yeah. Nobody told me right up there.
Yeah, I love Borrowed Time. Yeah.
Borrowed Time, I think, is good too.
I love his experiments with reggae on this album. You know, obviously it was on his mind after traveling to Bermuda. You know, you can definitely hear that. Of course, it's, you know, interesting. I mean, well, a lot of these songs, like Borrowed Time, and I'm Stepping Out. That's a great fun song too.
Sure.
And you know,
it's a great opening song too.
The intro is great. Yeah.
It really is. And you know, and you just get this sense, which of course when you listen to it now, it's you know, sad to think about, but you know, he just sounded so positive, confident, you know, you could tell that like he was just expecting, you know, this was going to be like, yeah, I don't know if I want to say his rebirth, but definitely his reemergence, you know, as an artist. And, and you could tell, you know, he must have been listening to some new wave. Because, I mean, you can hear B-52s, as you mentioned, Tom. There's also, I mean, you know, even some of the, like, Police and stuff like that. I mean, you just, when you hear it, you're just like, yeah, this is 80s new wave. I mean, you know, but not John's way. I mean, it's to me, that's what's great about it. He doesn't do it in a way that you're thinking, oh, he's just trying to, you know, jump on the trend. No, it's still John. And I love that. I actually love Forgive Me, My Little Flower Princess. Very unusual. I agree. It's very unusual. And that's probably why I like it. Know, I think that's really interesting. And I have to say, a few people here have been saying they didn't like Yoko's tracks. You know, you're the one. I actually think, you know, Yoko is really, you know, I think she was made for, you know, club tracks, and that's a good example of one. You know, I could absolutely picture that, you know, being played in dance clubs and all. And
that could be why she's having success on the dance charts.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, and she went on, of course, to, number hits on the dance charts. So you know, you really hear that here. So there are even some tracks like that are you know, really interesting. But it was just fascinating to listen to this, to think, wow, he was really expanding his horizons, looking into, you know, these different sounds. And I just, and, you know, and the personal songwriting still there, as you said, Tom. You know, he's writing about his years as a quotes house husband. You know, father, being a husband, you know, and Borrowed Time kind of saying I've grown, you know, I'm looking back to what I was, and now I'm much older, and you know, it's good to be here. You know, I mean, just a really highly personal songwriting, and it's just wow, what could this album have been, you know, if it had been finished. I mean, it's just it's wonderful. I sincerely thank you for suggesting this, because it had been a long time since I listened to it.
Yeah. Well, Rob, can I just read this one comment here from Rob Gerdson? Compare those new sounds. That was copying what was out there with McCartney 2. That says so much. You know, I remember John talking about, was it in Playboy, that, you know, defending new wave at the time, an artist like Blondie or the Talking Heads. So I'm sure he was listening to that stuff too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He must have been.
You know, was he listening to McCartney too? He loved Coming Up. You know that.
He loved Coming Up. Yeah,
that's right.
I'd like to ask you guys about the one song we haven't talked about yet, and it was the only song that wasn't recorded in the studio. You know, it was just the home demo of Grow Old With Me. You know, reading about how, you know, this was a big production was planned for this song, but after listening to it for all these years, I don't think I could ever listen to it a different way. I mean, it would sound so different. I mean, it's so haunting now, you know, to hear it and, you know, thinking that it would have a big production. I just can't see it, you know.
Well, did anymore. You hear the one that came out on the John Lennon Anthology box set? That's the
I
one
probably
that
I have. I probably, okay.
Yeah, there's orchestration from George Martin, and Giles also worked on it too. So it was given that treatment, and I think it worked pretty well. But it's an absolutely gorgeous song, and it deserves to be a standard. It was one of the four wedding songs that I chose for my wedding. We had one from each Beatle, and John's was Girl With Me. And, you know, there's one thing that I'd like to bring up about that song, and nobody ever says this, but you know that when Yoko gave Paul the cassette of John's songs for the Beatles to record for the Beatles anthology, we know there was Free as a Bird and Real Love and the song Now and Then that they briefly worked on. She also gave him Growl With Me. And I think the Beatles could have done a great job with that song. You know, that's an amazing song. And I never hear, you know, Paul ever talking about it, or George when he was alive, or Ringo, you know, but it's such an incredible song. It deserves to be a wedding song.
Yeah.
You know, it deserves to be a song that everybody knows. There was a cover by Mary Chapin Carpenter, which was actually a big hit on the adult contemporary charts. But by and large, most people don't know Growl With Me, and they really should. You know, and I love the fact that you've got the version that's on Milk and Honey, which is just a demo. It's so haunting by itself, with just John's vocals and a piano, with the ambiance of the room at the Dakota.
Yeah,
and then you've got the same thing with orchestration from George and Giles Martin. So you have a contrast there, but it's kind of similar to Free as a Bird and Real Love in applying those demos, but doing it for that song. So maybe the reason why that was done for the anthology box set is because the Beatles wouldn't do it for some reason, or maybe they just wanted to stop it too. But we also know that with Now and Then, George was complaining about the buzz on the tape. He didn't like that. You know, there have been times when I've spotted a quote from George where he talks about, you know, those silly Lennon demos. he might not have been thrilled to record them, but, you know, but Grow With Me is a tremendous song. It should be a classic today.
That's for sure. Yeah. We have a question here from Richard. Said, are any of you glad, like George was, that they passed on doing Now and Then? I agree with George. It's rubbish. What do you guys think?
I don't think it's that great a song.
Yeah.
I really don't. I definitely think Free as a Bird and Real Love were stronger songs, but I would have pushed for Grow With Me.
I
think they chose the best two songs for that project, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, and Rob said Grow Old With Me was his marriage song, so there you
go. Hi, Rob. Cool.
Very nice. Well, it is it's a beautiful song, and again, you know, what would it have sounded like if it had been more fleshed out and you know, but professionally done, but it has its own. I mean, as you said, it's haunting. Version is on there. So yeah. So do you feel somebody? And I apologize. I can't. We've scrolled past the comments. So somebody was saying that this is a good sequel to Double Fantasy, Milk and Honey. Is it a sequel to Double Fantasy, or do you think it stands on its own, or what do you guys think? You know, Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I think it was supposed to be. I mean, it was in the pipeline. You know, I had a question for you, Ken, you know, while talking with Jack Douglas. Did he seem bitter at all that his name wasn't on the Milk and Honey project at all, since he did work on a lot of those songs? Because I would seem that, you know, him not being, you know, commented, you know, on the credits, you know, would have been, you know, kind of like, you know, hey, you know, I worked on these too, you know.
I didn't bring that up. But, you know, the only conversation that you heard is what's on that tape.
Gotcha.
You know, so he didn't seem bitter at all. And he seemed like it was very cathartic for him to talk about John. He loved talking about John. Gotcha. So I hope that we can interview him again, because he does have a book coming out later this year. His own biography, Jack Douglas.
That I'd like to read. Absolutely. Yeah. And he's going to be at the Fest for Beatles Fans, I think.
That's true.
Next month, which we will be having a Talk More Talk panel there, by the way. So Well, we'll tell you more, guys, more about that as time gets closer. But Jack Douglas, he spoke at Beatlefest last year, and it was really, I agree, Ken, it seemed very cathartic for him in a way. I mean, he loved talking about Johnny. He'd get emotional, but in a good way.
Yeah.
You know? And it was really nice, and I'm glad that, you know, that he's feeling comfortable doing that, because boy, does he have stories. and you get a sense he's got more than he's telling.
Right.
But, you know, it's also a good thing that he's back working with Yoko, you know, because he was involved with Stripped Down.
Right.
You know, so, and he's been working on the one-to-one concerts, whatever's going to come out on that. So he didn't say when exactly that would be. He said there was a problem with the video that has to be corrected. So I'm kind of hoping that that's the next big project on John, if that if that does come out. Maybe I hope this year.
Oh, I hope.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's for sure. And So it's interesting because in a way, this Milk and Honey did end up being kind of a sequel in terms of, you know, theme. In a way, but I don't know. I mean, it is just a great album on its own. I think. I mean, these songs are just so strong. It you know, as I said, it's just a shame that, you know, we couldn't hear the finished product. But even so, I mean, I think Tom, you were mentioning earlier that it was a lot of these were rehearsals, which is amazing because when you hear them, I mean, if that's a rehearsal. But of course he was working with, you know, top people. I mean, that, you know,
right.
So I think they were very used to this, but it was really, it just was such a treat. And, I'm glad that this came out because, you know, sort of like what you were saying earlier, Ken, that it introduced Tom and me to his solo work, because they promoted it so much. I mean, there was a video for Steppin' Out too.
Yep.
I know that. Mm. Yep. And was
Borrowed
there
Time?
Yeah,
Borrowed Time had a video.
I mean, they are both a lot. Did, you know, so absolutely. So I think we've run out of time to talk about Men Love Avenue, but no problem, because we will talk about that next week and next episode. Maybe we'll even get into the live album, New York City, Live in New York City. That's the other posthumous release that came out. That's
same year, too.
Yes, yeah, same year. Yeah,
exactly. 1986.
Yep, got both on cassette. So,
well, you know, you just mentioned something which is a great idea for a show, which is, you know, how you first got into the Beatles. And like you've said, Kit, with you, it kind of started, even though you heard the Beatles growing up and some of their solo work, it was all through Michael Jackson, you know, and, you know, from Say, Buying Pipes of Peace. Yeah. And so it doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there. You know, it doesn't matter what album you start with.
Yep, we need t-shirts made of that. I really think so. I think we need to have t-shirts made with that. That's great, because it's true.
Yeah. But definitely Milk and Honey is both a sequel and it stands on its own, too.
Yep.
You know, and as I've said many times, the most important thing when it comes to music is the quality of the song. And sometimes the production can enhance it, but if you don't have great material first, it doesn't really matter. So when you're hearing songs like these that may come across more as rehearsals, it doesn't matter because the songs are good.
That is
so, you know, I say that all the time about Beatle and solo Beatle material.
Yep.
The song that comes first.
That is true. And that's a great place to leave off the conversation. But before we go, we want to make sure we mention stuff that's coming up for us and let you know where you can reach us. So, Tom, let's how about start with you? What's going on with you?
Well, thank you, Kit. You know, as I posted or as I said last time, we are interview with with the artist, and you know, I'm blanking anyways, but anyways, you can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Find us on our Facebook page at Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. You know, like the page. You know, I love talking McCartney with everybody out there, and David and I will be hopefully doing a show on the Wildlife Archive box set. You know, we've both been busy, so it's hard to both of us to get together these days with all the washing and the scrubbing and whatever, you know, like Ringo said. But anyways, that's what we're doing at the moment. So hopefully we'll have a new episode up soon. So awesome. There you go.
Maybe you need three legs.
Yeah. Yes.
One more would be nice.
All right, Mr. Michaels, what do you have coming up?
Well, I've got something very big planned on my website. I have a special contest coming, which starts this Thursday, and it is called the World of Ken Contest. You ask, what on earth could that be? Well, it's three prizes, all from guys named Ken. We have our own Ken Womack, his most recent book, Sound Pictures, is volume 2 of his autobiographies on George Martin. We have Ken Mansfield, who recently put out a book, The Roof, the Beatles' final concert. He was the former U.S. manager for Apple Records. And we have his new book. And then we've got me. And I have absolutely no ability to write a book. But what I do have is a website. And every single, right. Didn't think it would go over that well. I have Beatles trivia every single week where you can win 1 out of 9 prizes. So if you're the winner of this special contest, you can pick one of those 9 prizes. Ken Womack's book, Ken Mansfield's book, and Ken Michaels, a prize from my website. So if you want to know all the details, just go to kenmichaelsradio.com. Right on the homepage, it'll point you to my special contest page, which will tell you how to win. It all starts this Thursday. I also did an interview last week with Elliot Mintz, and he was great to talk to. And we did one recently on the Things We Said Today podcast, and that was one of our best shows ever, I think. And so we tackled some of the same subjects and a lot of other things that we didn't in the podcast show, especially talking about the Lost Lennon Tapes radio series, which to me is probably the greatest gift that Yoko's given to the Lennon fans, to me anyway. Although that Imagine box set,
yeah,
pretty damn close. So if you want to hear the interview that I just did with Elliot Mintz, it's on interviews page 4 of my website. And that's the same page where you can find my recent interview with Denny Sywell. And like I mentioned before, Zach Nilsson is on there as well. So we got all that going on the website. The Things We Said Today podcast, there'll be a new one coming out Wednesday or Thursday. It's actually one of our longest shows ever.
Whoa.
It's kind of like the Two Legs podcast sometimes.
Yes, yes, it goes on and on.
It's almost 2 hours long. And I have a special guest, John Montagna, who's a great musician, was with Alan Parsons for 7 years. He's been part of the Happy Together tours and the house band. He was also part of the house band for a few tours called The Walk Down Abbey Road, which you might remember in the early 2000s. And we're talking about Paul as a bass player. And he's going to be doing a special presentation at the Fest for Beatle fans where it's about Paul's bass playing on the Abbey Road album. So we talk about that. Since it's the anniversary coming up, we talk about that and Paul's bass playing throughout his Beatle years. And we spotlight some of his solo work. We only had 2 hours. So so if you like hearing about Paul as a bass player, check that out. That will be on podbean.com and also on YouTube. We have our own channel, The Things We Said Today podcast, with Alan Cozen and Darren DeVivo. So all that's going on. And one more thing, my live show for Every Little Thing, which is this Wednesday on WNHU at 8 p.m. Eastern, is an all George Harrison show for his birthday for next week. Oh, nice. So if you want to stream that, that's WNHU.org this Wednesday night at 8 p.m.
Fantastic. You are always a busy, busy, busy guy. That's for sure. Well, I have actually talking about streaming shows. If you're watching this right now, later tonight at 11:30 p.m. Eastern, I am going to have my latest Bottomless Soul show, and it is going to be about the R&B songs that the Beatles covered. This was such a fun show to put together. If you like Arthur Alexander, if you like the Donays, this is your night, because I'm playing those artists, and it's the first of a two-part show. So it's really, really a fun show. So you can go to the site that's right there on the screen, and you just listen in live, and it's about 20 minutes long, and I think you'll really get a kick out of it. I also have a column up at Blinded by Sound, which is a tribute to a great soul singer we lost recently, James Ingram, which is really
very nice.
That was a sad passing, and so it was an honor to write about him. Deep Beatles is coming back this week, and I am going to, Saturday night, those of you who are local, who may be watching or listening to this, I'm going to be taking part in a George Harrison birthday bash at a club called Martyrs in Chicago. Saturday the 23rd, I think it starts at 7, and I'm going to be doing a trivia contest, and yes, there will be prizes. So all you have to do is just go on Facebook and search for Martyrs, and you'll get all the details, and you can order tickets in advance or get them right at the door. So busy, busy, busy times for all of us, for sure. But yep. I'll tell you, the show goes by in like 2 seconds. And I'm
in the blink of an eye.
I see what you did.
You guys want that trivia question real quick?
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. What solo Beatles LP was the first on compact disc?
Wait. I think I know. Do you want to guess first, Kit?
Oh, man. No, go ahead. You guess.
Give my regards to Broad Street.
Wrong.
I'm pretty sure that would work.
Oh, man. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Would it be Pipes of Peace?
No.
Oh, champ.
Well, listen. Anyways, doing the research on Milk and Honey, I was told it was Milk and Honey.
Oh, really?
Was the first solo LP released on compact disc? Yep.
No kidding. Wow.
I could have sworn I heard it was Broad Street. But
okay. Well, I don't know. I'll bring it up and we'll.
Oh, someone else says George says Tug of War.
George Frank, yeah. Tug of War.
Got a fight here, guys. I think
we'll settle it.
We're Cloud Nine.
We'll set it out of court. Yes.
Oh, you started up something, Tom. All right.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Next time we will talk about Men Love Avenue. We'll have all the different news. I'm sure there's going to be a ton more by the time we get back together. So on behalf of Ken Michaels and Tom Hunyadi, this is Kit O'Toole saying thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time. What?